You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. The Literature Corner.
An old friend comes for a visit. I, despite now being an agnostic, every now and then, you can't escape your past. And I am a Catholic past. In fact, I had a lecturer at Rhodes University who said to me, apparently you're Catholic for life, so Catholic guilt is going to stay with me. I was just at the moment, I thought, you know what? We haven't had Kate on here forever. I wonder if she thinks that we have divorced her. But she can't think that because she knows how much we love her every time she comes on the show. So I've got columnist, feature writer, author Kate Sidley with me here in the studio. How's it, Kate?
Hi there. I was wondering if you'd ghosted me.
If I ghosted you?
Yes.
You're so polite. You should have told me, hey, Wena, you and I haven't done our literary dance in the longest. Have you been well?
Well, I am here to tango. I've been very well, thank you. A bit coldy now, but generally
it
fine.
Is very cold,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Are we going to be dancing on Saturday as well?
At a birthday party?
Oh, I can't wait.
We are.
Yeah, that's going to be great fun.
Better limber up.
I feel guilty, hey. I've sort of read in the last couple of months what I needed to read for my author interviews and stuff, and one or two reviews. But in the last 3 weeks in particular, my reading is kind of like slowed down. How's your reading year been?
My reading year has been dominated by the early part of it by the book festivals. So because I do panels at Franschhoek, I had a lot of Franschhoek reading to do, which is always nice. You know, it's good to be sort of forced into a particular, I don't know, genre or something to look at it in that way.
And to be immersed in the community, which is important.
It is important,
absolutely. Okay, well, before we get on to some of the books that you have here, maybe we can speak to one of the authors as well. We'll see whether we can get them on the line. I want to invite you at home, in the office, in the car. Obviously, you're going to have to make sure it's on hands-free kit or that you get off the side of the road. Just tell Kate and I what you have been reading and do a little bit of a review. There's no reason why reviews should be restricted to people who've done literary theory and all sorts of weird criticism and critical studies and speaking jawbreakers. You call us, you tell us what the last book is that you've read, and was it a cool book or not? And I'll give you a minute or so to do book reviews. So let's call this the book review segment of the Literature Corner. 011-883-0702 in Joburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And what I love about this kind of sort of open line segment is that you and I and our guests that we have, we just like different genres, and that's okay. And life is short. You can't read everything, but maybe your curiosity will be piqued if you hear what other people are reading that you've not been reading. So let's share the love of reading, the love of books, and do a very quick review for me of the last book that you had put down. Kate, which one are we going to start with in terms of what you've been up to?
I'd like to start with this one. It's called Insomniac City, and its subtitle is New York, Oliver and Me, and it's by Bill Hayes. I don't think a lot of people know Bill Hayes very well as a writer, but they will know the Oliver in the subtitle, which is Oliver Sacks, who is a very well-known neurologist, and wrote just really beautifully about the human condition and about illnesses and about neurology and about patients as humans, and just a wonderful, wonderful writer. And I was drawn to this book for that reason, because I'm a big, as you can probably hear, Oliver Sacks fan. And Bill Hayes was Oliver's partner in the last sort of nearly decade of his life. And in fact, in his own memoir, On the Move, Oliver wrote about his life. And he wrote for the first time about his sexuality and about his romantic life. And he finally admitted that he was gay, which he'd been had not admitted before. And he'd also been 35 years celibate. I think because of he grew up in a very kind of horrible, judgmental, cold English environment at some point. But I mean, particularly his mother. So he had this, you know, this really isolated romantic life. And then he mentions in the book that he's met Billy. So that was all very nice for those of us who love Oliver, that he'd finally fallen in love and all this kind of thing. But we had no idea who Billy was. And it turns out Billy is Bill Hayes, and he's written his own memoir. So it's quite lovely to read the two of them if you are sufficiently
look the context.
Interested.
Of the book's landing alone is a stunning story.
Yeah, it's such and it's
and
such
how does
a lovely
how
book.
Does it how does it read? Have you finished it?
Yeah. In fact, I sort of cheated a bit on the brief. I read this a few months ago, but I bought it anyway because I loved it so much and I wanted everyone else to read it. So so this is a book about New York City. I mean, Bill and he moves to New York City and he meets Oliver and they fall in love. Now you must remember they fall in love. Oliver's 79, and Bill is 30 years younger than him, which is one of the things that I loved about the book. It's such an inclusive view of love, and particularly romantic love, because they adored each other. It's like romantic and sexual and all the things. And they're these sort of two, you know, older people, in particular Oliver. I mean, when he died, he was in his sort of late 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a beautiful story. It's very much, it's not a memoir where it sort of starts at the beginning and schleps its whole way through. It's very episodic. It's kind of vignettes of their life. It's reported conversations.
Does that work as a technique? So you weren't annoyed by a lack of chronology from cradle to grave?
There was a chronology. It mostly, most of the chronology was from when they met, although there were little sort of back parts to it as well, you know, sort of looking back. But it's beautiful. And it also talks about New York, because the insomniac in the story is Bill. He didn't sleep very well. So he'd be wandering the streets and he would find all these people. So there are these little vignettes of different New York eccentrics. And, you know, he'd be at the skate park with the kids and chatting to them, and they would be having a joint and he'd be talking and whatever. And so it's a really lovely book.
A few, I love that,
photographs in it. I would recommend
it. Sounds like it's a very good mix of both memoir, biography, and cityscape.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And
what about the writing quality? Is it beautifully crafted?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's not as literary as Oliver's writing, but it really is a very personal story. And you see them, these little sort of tender vignettes of the two of them, you know, sort of getting stoned together and like watching the clouds and, you know, chatting in the bath and these sort of odd conversations that they have. It's really lovely. So I would recommend that if you like memoir, if you like...
Okay. And for other people also loved Oliver Sacks as much as you did, did you learn interesting new things?
You know, I think for me what was lovely was to see him being so loved so late in life, after having this, you know, really isolated life, romantically at least, for not in his intellectual life, but romantically, for such a long time, and just that he was so tendered and so loved, and those intimate little slices of life, because he's a very odd person, so there would be these scenes. There was one scene where he'd never opened a champagne bottle, which I know is not, you know, unique in the world.
He hasn't lived.
I know, has not lived. And Hayes
has he sabraged one?
No, definitely not. And Bill shows him how to do it, and he's so charmed by it, and he's so nervous that he wears his swimming goggles while he does it, because he's not sure what's going to happen. You know, he's quite a reticent fellow.
Ah, that's stunning.
Yeah,
I love
it. Lovely.
I love it. Okay, so let's take a break there. Insomniac City, New York, Oliver and Me. It sounds absolutely delicious, by Bill Hayes. Comes highly recommended by Kate Sedley, who's our guest this half an hour. Tell us what you are reading currently on 011-883-0702, or not currently, the last thing you read. Just do a little book review. I'll give you 30 seconds, 45 seconds or so, and just tell us whether you like the book or not. In Cape Town, you can do so on 021-446-0567. 16 minutes after 11.
702 and Cape Talk, the Literature Corner.
19 minutes after 11, tell us what you have read and what you make of it. Romy and Santon, what's the last book you read? That's not a title.
She got a parrot.
We'll come back to Romy in a second. I think she forgot that she was on there. But you have a book that is a debut novel. Debut novels are always generate a lot of discussion, a lot of pressure around them. Which one are we talking about next?
This is called Selling Lip Service. It's by Tammy Bakey. And it came out last year. In fact, it didn't. It came out this year. But last year, it was the winner of the Jacana Debut Fiction Award, which is quite an accolade. And it's the reason that I chose this one is that it's a really unusual novel for South Africa. It's not set in South Africa. It's set in a place that we were an unidentified place, in a kind of a near future setting. And in this world, language is a commodity. It's a source of control. So this is really a book about language. And I think that a lot of the people that listen to your show probably are interested in words and interested in language. And it's interesting on both of those levels. So the background to the story is that people can only speak, once they come of age, they can only speak if they're wearing these transdermal patches, which are sponsored by corporations and scripted by copywriters.
That sounds fascinating.
It is such a good idea. I mean, just from a sort of philosophical and sort of existential point of view, it's got a lot of legs, this book. So the protagonist wants to be her own voice and wants to have her own voice and circumvent these powers that control language and this consumerist society. And so she wants to exercise her own self and her own voice outside of the sort of babble of the brand. And I think we've actually got the author. Have we got the author?
We do indeed. Hello, Tammy.
Are you there, Tammy?
Hi.
Hi, congratulations on this stunning literary achievement. Kate has convinced me that I've been missing out on life by not reading it. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel very flattered now.
It's nice to talk to you, Tammy. I gave a little bit of background to the book, but maybe you could give a little background to how you wrote it and how you think about language, because I know you are also a translator, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. So I work full-time as a translator, and the first time you start translating, it's a very sort of odd experience, and I've described it as almost sort of ventriloquism, or sort of having somebody else speak for you, because particularly in the work that I do, I often have to research the subjects and the vocabulary, and especially when you've just gotten to the end of an arts degree and you're suddenly given these sort of legal or financial translations to do, it feels like you look at what you've written and you sort of think, who wrote this? It might be in English and it might have been me, but it doesn't feel like it. So that was sort of the idea, but it also comes from an awareness of the amount of work that I do with kind of advertising, that the way that we kind of adopt these languages that other people have scripted, and that was sort of a central kind of concern of mine, and particularly coming from the sort of the consumerism that we have in, I think, virtually all societies.
Tammy, can I ask a question here from the Peanut Gallery? Not having read your book yet, but as soon as Kate was describing it to me, I was thinking about certain bits and pieces in The Unbearable Lightness of Being, in the sense of it must be really hard to write a book about language in which part of the motivation is to deliver insights about and comment on language, and you're using language in the process. How did that play out for you in terms of the creative process?
That was sort of very central to it. So I do sort of accentuate or exaggerate the sort of the techniques that are used in a lot of advertising. So the play with words and the sort of not just in puns, but in sort of distorting idioms and that kind of thing. So there's that sort of sense. But I also sort of attempted to try to have the protagonist see the world a little bit differently and have her personal idiom as distinctive as possible. So, yes, it is tricky, and I like to believe that in some ways that is addressed, that the way that language functions socially as well as almost sort of an art form are at loggerheads in the book.
Well, the novel considers all different sort of ways that language functions, doesn't it? I mean, it's as communication, as advertising copy, as commerce, as a means of control, of human connection. It's quite interesting on that level. And it's also, the thing that I liked about it is that it's quite fun on the level of your wordplay and your creation of words. And I think that's something that people will enjoy. I mean, we're making it sound very very sort of philosophical maybe, but it's also kind of a fun read. If you like to indulge in a bit of wordplay and read those kinds of things, it's really very inventive, which I think is so nice to see someone doing something different.
Tammy, all the best. And what's up next? Is it horrible in a sort of lopsided way to have had such an excellent debut novel? I mean, I read some of the comments here that Kate shared with me from the judging panel that awarded you rightly so, for this incredible first fiction. I mean, one of them said, Kate, it presents a Huxley-like future conveyed with a Burgess-like linguistic skill. Brilliant and guaranteed to appeal to anyone who loves reading. Are you now going to go into an attic and emerge 80 years later with novel 2?
Well, yes, I'm going to go into an attic and emerge with a novel. I just hope it's not 80 years later.
Congratulations and happy sales to you. I certainly will pick it up myself as well. Look forward to reading it.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Cheers. Yeah, high praise. Let's go back to Romy and see what Romy's up to. Hello, Romy.
Hi, Eusebius. So the book that I'd like to recommend is called A Walk Across,
And it starts off in Bombay, and it's really a wonderful story about human trafficking and romance and thriller, drama, there's all of it. But also the book is written by an author called Corbin Addison, who is an attorney by trade. And so, of course, he understands and possibly specializes, I'm not sure, in the likes of human trafficking. So it's based on a lot of facts. And it just, besides the fact that it was so entertaining as a holiday read, it was easy to read. I also learned quite a bit, and I'm quite shocked by stuff we don't even know, and we don't realize how bad human trafficking is, and it's worldwide.
Wow, so you highly recommend it, A Walk Across the Sun.
Highly, by Corbin Addison, and his style of the book is also unbelievably well done. Like, it's brilliantly written, and it's an easy run.
Stunning stuff. Let's take one more call. Oh, we had Joan there. We've just lost Joan there. We've got about 2 minutes. Time flies, man, when I'm having fun with you.
I know.
Why don't we go through the other ones a bit more quickly?
Let's show
some love to Paige Nick.
Okay, let's show some love to Paige Nick, who has written this really very funny book called Unprecedented. And if you've seen the cover in Exclusive Books, you'll know exactly what it's about. So it's 2020 in South Africa, and the president has just been released from prison on medical parole thanks to an ingrown toenail. So that's the premise. You can see where it's going. It's satire. She really totally milks it for laughs. It's very funny. It's easy to read. The story is that he's sort of trying to get his life back on track, and he's got this disgraced journalist who's supposed to be writing his memoirs. And, of course, what the president remembers or wants to be recorded and what really happened are two quite different things. And it's just very funny. I mean, they're all elements to it. My very favorite, actually, is the president's wives. He goes back to his unnamed homestead. I think we all know where that is. And he's down to two, a measly two wives, and they have taken over the place and started their own businesses. They are very, like, smart together women, and the two of them are on Tinder looking for options, just because they never knew when he was coming out of prison, and they've decided they're going to jump ship, you know.
And it's a quick read, it's a funny read, and it's a wonderful riff off social and political reality.
Yeah, you can read it, you know, you sit down with it on the weekend, and, you know, it's pacey, it's topical, it's fun.
Great stuff. Paige Nick, we're going to have you on the show very, very soon. Love your work. That and also the previous novel was just as hilarious for all those going to Benting in Cape Town. You'd have loved that. And then the final one,
quick is Eko Duka's book, The God Who Made Mistakes. What I liked about this book is that it takes place in contemporary Joburg. It's a suburban couple, Temba and Ayanda. They've got the whole thing. They've got the legal careers, the house in the suburbs. But there are various things that are at play there. There's a secret. There's a tension and a distance between them. And the story moves between them and the burbs and Alex, where Temba's mom and brother live. And she's the mother's house is all that's standing between a developer and a new shopping center. So she's holding out for money. And that obviously has an impact on the whole family, who obviously, when there's money involved, you know, people's motives. And, you know, I think he's a really good writer. I mean, he's written a couple of books. I think this is his third, maybe. I'm not quite sure. He wrote Dying in New York.
That's
and
right.
White Wahala. I think those, yeah, the
yes,
two. Yeah, so I think
one.
This is his third. And, you know, he's a really good writer. He deals with, in this book, a lot of social issues, greed and desire and social mobility and sexuality and marriage. And he does.
And you know
really
what I
nice
like
way.
About him is that he takes a chance on his own empathetic capacity by writing lines that are different to himself. And in an era where we are all having to justify whether we are the ones to tell stories of people who look very different to ourselves.
Yeah.
He just gets on with it, and he did his homework. And a couple of my mates, actually, if they're listening, they will know who they are, were part of the subjects of his research before he wrote some of the characters. But I love that about him, rather than just writing semi-autobiographical novels.
Yeah, he does a good job with his characters. I mean, you don't like all of them, but, you know, they you empathize with them even when they are having sort of real internal struggles and they're not really behaving maybe that well in this way or that way. And I think they feel real, and he's got a sense of humor. He writes some beautiful lines. So I think it's a worthwhile read. He's a good
and
storyteller.
On top of that, you tell me that he's a really nice guy. That's
he
a good
a
reason
nice
to
guy.
Support him
yes.
as well. Absolutely.
He's a nice guy.
Kate Tilley, we must have you back soon, at least in the next 4 weeks. Thank you so much for coming with your bag of books and your wonderfully incisive and generous reviews as well.
Thank you. It was lovely to be here. I enjoyed seeing you as well.